Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to the Warmaster Podcast, episode 149 with Chris and Barry.
Hello, listeners.
Hello. No Paul today again. I need to put it on record that Paul isn't dead in my basement, like Dr. Dre in that Eminem record. Paul is alive. He's working, saving lives at an A&E, but he couldn't make this recording session today, which he was invited to. This is the first proper episode we've had since late August, which was episode 148. The Revolution, Warmaster and the Next Generations. This is talking about the evolution of the Warmaster Revolution Rules Committee. And we are going to get back on to doing some army lists and stuff in the future, and Paul will be available in those. It's just I've been doing some one-on-one interviews kind of remotely, and we haven't really been recording any of these episodes. So he'll be back next time, hopefully, God willing.
We miss him. We miss Paul. It's not the same without him.
Paul misses Paul, I'll tell you that. In true Paul fashion, he's not shy at coming forward, that lad. Right, but that's a gift. That's a gift from God. So today, me and Chris are going to be discussing the Rules Committee. I mean, this is admin stuff. This is not really Paul's expertise. This is kind of flim-flam. So we're going to be discussing how the Rules Committee's reformulating itself and also formalizing a way for people to get proposals through the system and into the game, which is good. Because it's been a little bit ad hoc until this point, but going forward, it needs to be something that people can look at and challenge and get involved in. So, Chris, anything you want to tell people about what you've been up to in the wide world before we get started?
The big wide world of Warmaster. I've been converting stuff, converting things for a high elf army. I'm trying to do some Phoenix Riders. Just nice character mounts, things like that.
Phoenix Riders, have you just made them up? Phoenix Riders, what are they?
No, it's just going to be a nice mount for, if you take the Aether Wings from one of the Age of Sigmar box sets, it's about the right size. But what I want to try and do is make it actually look like more like a phoenix would, just as a character. So it'll be a character mount. It'll switch for an eagle or maybe a dragon stats,
but,
I don't know.
Yeah, but is that something in the list now, phoenixes?
It's just going to be a nice model. No need for like almost everything else that I convert, because I'm a glutton for punishment for converting stuff. It's just going to be something that'll fit to a nice proxy for something on the list, because I like to keep the game nice and simple. And
I do need to say that Chris sent me a present for my birthday that Paul painted, and it was a fighty general, because he knows how much I love getting fighty generals involved in the game. And this was an enormous lump. I don't know what the correct term for something four times the size of a mammoth is in Warmaster, but that's what it was on, I guess.
Stonehorn, Thunder Tusk, I think that one looked more like. Right. But again, you know, one of the big Games Workshop box sets had the ogres on this enormous thing. And I found something that looked quite nice for that. So yeah, why not make up one of those? And you know, with the playing the ogre army, which I have tried to do mostly unsuccessfully, your general's got to get in the fight at some point. It's just not there's no way to do it.
He is a big unit in this. Maybe I'll get him on camera at some point. But he is a monster of a thing, isn't he? He's gigantic. This mount must be on a 40 mil base or something.
I think actually it's on 60 mil diameter base, because the monster wouldn't fit on anything else. It was just so big.
Fantastic.
Hopefully you lose your general less often than Paul does.
I never commit him to fighting. I'll put him in there. I'll put him in there because I've got to. But God, I hate committing him to fights. I hate it. Right. Okay. Sorry, Chris.
I've been doing a bit of that. And what else? I ordered some stuff from Excellent Miniatures. You know, the German guys who are doing the 3D printing.
Yeah.
So some Wood Elf stuff to compare with the stuff I'd got from Printing in Detail. Again, excellent miniatures, very, very nice, good quality models, indistinguishable from the stuff from Printing in Detail. What they also do that you might not be aware of, they've got quite a few other models. They're taking stuff from other Patreons and scaling them down to 10 millimeter. So if you're doing a Vampire Counts army, they have a couple of really gorgeous looking Vampire Count characters. So there's a character, a Vampire Lord on a fell bat, sorry, a dire bat, I should say correctly. Big bat that's sort of walking around on its knuckles. It looks fantastic. And the scaled down version that I got this week, it looks absolutely phenomenally good. So if you want a nice model for, and again, like with these things, no special rules for it. It's just another way of doing your character. It could substitute in for the winged nightmare in the list, mm-hmm. Or just could be a nice, cool model for your general. Okay. But yeah, their stuff's been very, very nice. And the guy, Stefan, who's running the company, is a nice guy. You can email back and forth with him, and he's very helpful. So I know a couple of other people who've sent files to him for scaling down and printing, and that's something that I'll be looking at to see if there's anything useful to come out of that.
Where are we going to start today? Are we going to start on, I guess we start, should we start on the flow chart? Because that's where most of the stuff's going to exist, isn't it? That's where most of the discussion is.
Okay. Well, I think, sorry, a bit of background here. We often see on the Facebook page, people come along with really nice ideas, but why don't we do this? Why can't we add this? Where's the army list for this type of thing? And having watched a lot of those discussions in the background, what I've realized, and I think Barry realizes as well, a lot of people have very good ideas, and the idea maybe gains a little bit of traction and then it disappears from view. Partly because Facebook isn't a great place to have these kind of discussions, because any of you know, it's almost impossible to go back and find something that somebody posted a month ago, never mind 6 months ago.
I sometimes can't find something they've posted and I've seen 5 minutes ago. It just somehow it's unsearchable. But yeah, sorry.
You're absolutely right. So trying to have a discussion about something becomes difficult. Also with the rules system in War Master, I think one of the common things that comes out when people talk about it, the rules system is very tight. It's very, very well balanced, which makes for a good playing experience for everybody who's involved in the community. You can pitch up with an army, and we know whatever list you've got, that the lists are balanced to play against each other. Sometimes they're, you know, the matchups sometimes are pretty good, but the idea is it's fun for everybody. And sometimes the ideas that people come along with, they need a little bit of work in order to fit into that well-balanced community that we have. So the idea really of how do we get things through that process, and what Barry and I are talking about, this is a conversation that we've been having in the background for how many months now?
It seems probably like started a lot of maybe, months.
Yeah.
4 months,
I've lost
maybe?
Track of I've lost track of all the days, to be honest, in the dystopian world that we currently inhabit. But the idea here is to try and, firstly, when people come along with good ideas, sometimes what you thought was a good idea and you put on a Facebook post, it's not quite as good an idea when somebody else looks at it and somebody says, no, wait a minute, what about this? What about that? What about the other thing? So we realize that testing things out, trying things out with, you know, within your own group of players, that's important. But also what happens when something gets into the hands of other people, and how does that process then go forwards? So it's interesting, actually, a couple of people have posted on Facebook in the last couple of days about getting stuff into the game. And this really is the process that we're trying to put in place so that we have some places that we can try things out. We just bring up a diagram here. Now this, when you first look at it, does appear a little bit complicated, but what I'll try and do is talk everybody through it.
Is it coming up? There we go. Excellent.
That?
Yep.
You got it? Right. Perfect. Fantastic. So we've borrowed some of these designations from the Epic community, because they have a fairly well-defined mechanism for bringing things from being a great idea that you had one time into something that's officially approved in the rules. So we also need to recognize that it's probably we needed to replace outside of the committee to try and decide, to try and experiment with things and test drive things. So the idea is that we have a separate forum. Barry and I will put together exactly where that's going to be. We could use a specialist arms forum, or we will set up another board in the same place that we host the rules committee stuff. But the idea is that we'll have a discussion board there where ideas that you want to try and bring forward can be looked at by everybody else and talked about and decided on outside of Facebook, so that we can keep a record of the discussions, so that we can bring something up, play test it, come back a couple of months later, talk about the results of the play testing in a way that you can't on Facebook. So as you can probably see, there's basically four different designations for rules. And this could be, for example, a change to some stat line for a unit. It could be a new unit. It could be a whole new army list, etc. So the conceptual stage is the first thing. So you have an idea. That's the little blue boxes on the top left of the screen. You work on it a bit, you write it down, and you start to show it to some other people. And that's what this new forum that we'll set up will, that's where it has its place. Some people from the rules committee will be there. Everybody is welcome to come along and see what people are talking about. And the idea is you do some play testing on what, by the time you've hammered out a few ideas and got to probably a second draft of what you initially came up with, that now is called experimental. So we do lots of testing of things that are experimental. There will be probably substantial changes at this stage. And the experimental and conceptual designations, these are rules that are not going to be recommended for use in a tournament setting, because it's very likely that whatever is being discussed and worked upon, it's probably not going to be balanced. And that unbalanced things make for a bad game for everybody.
Yeah. Sorry, Chris. So it is important to say that some people are really keen to embrace optional rules and experimental rules and stuff, and that's great. Do that at home. Do that when you're playing, like not in tournament settings, but adding these into tournament settings before they're ready can, as Chris say, have negative impacts that you don't really. You don't want somebody to lose a game to an experimental army that's had virtually no play testing.
Yeah.
Because people pay money and they invest time and energy to go to tournaments, so they want that tournament experience to be as robust as possible. So this kind of stuff, please don't bring into tournaments. Leave that for the developmental and further on the line.
Yeah. I think that is important, that what we're talking about here is about really trying to create balanced armies and balanced other things for tournament play. You can house rule stuff all you like, doesn't really matter. And you, what you may find is that something that you've house ruled and played around with, that might then be something that the wider community might like, and this is how you can bring it into that wider community and share it with everybody else. So the idea is the experimental stuff, it goes around, you play test it, and you work on it to a point actually where it looks like it actually might be worth moving it forwards. So if we think about the journey that the, for example, I'll talk about the Nippon list, because that was the one that I worked on with the rest of the committee over the last year or so. So the Nippon thing, it started off as a conceptual idea. I had a couple of drafts. I took on board some ideas from some other people. We talked about it. It became an experimental idea. And again, lots more discussion. We settled on a version of the list that we liked. And then we had a vote. Can we move this on to what we called it? It looked like it was reasonably balanced. We'd done some play testing. Unfortunately, because of COVID, not as much as we would have liked. But we wanted to get it out there into the wider community. So we had a vote. The vote was passed. So the Nippon list currently is at this developmental stage of its life. The developmental lists, we believe they are balanced for most opponents and most other army lists, but there may be some things that we haven't thought of, some exploits, some something that somebody will come up with that will make will unbalance the list. So these are optional. It's up to the tournament organizer whether the tournament organizer will allow a developmental list to be used in a tournament setting.
One thing to say though is it is probably a good idea to test these in tournament settings, because that's where like tournament type players will try and push boundaries. So
yeah, absolutely.
As part of the play testing, it is important for these lists, if we're talking about the Nippon or Cathay list or whatever, to be pushed as hard as possible. And that will probably happen in tournament environments.
Yep. And also, actually, if you want to get a lot of play testing data done quickly on an army, a tournament is a good idea, because in our standard ways of doing things in the UK, you get three different opponents or three different armies all in one day. And it's interesting that we've had quite a wide mix of different opponents for the Nippon list over the last couple of tournaments. So, and that's useful also to see how the list performs in the hands of different players. So that, and that the tournament environment is good as long as the tournament organizer is happy to have it. And with, you know, so far, the tournament organizers, mainly Paul Winter, Paul's very keen to embrace new things as well. So quite a bit of play testing needs to be done, and we also need to recognize that our community in War Master is small. It's not like 40K, where dozens of games are going on every single week. Things happen at a slightly more relaxed pace, so things need some time to settle in, some time for play testing in different groups of players, different player communities within our game. So for small changes being tweaking stat lines, changing points values, things like that, things will need to remain at developmental status for probably at least a year. Major changes, meaning a new army list, for example, Nippon or Cathay, those are probably going to stay at developmental for about 2 years while we are working out all the permutations. During that time, it will become obvious whether the list needs some alterations or not. So if you look at the first yellow box in about the middle of the screen that says developmental status. So from there, there's two possibilities as to how things are going. The bottom pathway is the one where we need to make some amendments. And this is actually where we are already at with the Cathay list. Jim has tried out the Cathay list again in a couple of tournament settings and wants to make some tweaks to it. So the idea is then it comes to the committee, and the committee will decide whether that's something that needs to be played. It's very likely that something that needs a list that has been made up, when it goes out into the wider world, it will need some changes. And it's likely that those changes will go around a little bit so that we can refine things as we go before a vote is had to make it into approved status. It's possible that you get it right first time. That's the upper pathway, that something, you've got a list where no amendments are needed, or no, perhaps no further amendments are needed, and it can be put up to a vote for approved status. Which of those pathways you go on, I think it probably depends how much time you play test in the experimental stage. If you don't play test, if you aren't able to play test very much in the experimental stage, then probably some more changes during the developmental period will be needed. But the idea is that by the time something becomes approved basically means it's an official army list for War Master Revolution, like High Elves, Dwarves, Empire, Dark Elves, all the other ones that we know would love, and they should be balanced for every opponent. So currently, if we think about the lists that we have, all the lists in the War Master Revolution army list book, they are all approved status, including the Barry's favorite, the Wood Elves, and the Nippon Cathay list, they are developmental status. So hopefully that's not too complicated. It does look a little bit bureaucratic, but the whole idea behind this is the long-term interest of War Master is keeping it tight and balanced in the way that we all love.
Okay. What I would say is most of the changes are going to be relatively minor changes, and they will go along the top of the developmental route, I'm pretty sure. If it's a small amendment to the points cost of a unit or something, that Yeah, so that's going to go across the top. The more complicated, where you're building an entire list, those are the kind of things that are more likely to go along the bottom. And the reason we had to put this bottom in is because we came across a situation recently where Jim wanted to change something, and in the system we had the idea of putting in place, there was no safety valve for changes to be made and then playtesting to be restarted effectively, or added playtesting to be put in. So we needed to find a way to allow amendments within the developmental route. Not for simple stuff, but for the complicated, you know, I'm building a new list.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, okay, so examples of some of the minor things. We've been discussing endlessly the points values and stat lines for Chaos Dwarf Bull Centaurs. And eventually, I don't think we've reached a decision on that. But hopefully when we do, then... that we're expecting that we'll try that out for a year or so. If that seems to be working, from the abundance of Chaos Dwarf players that we have around the world, then we can push that through quite quickly.
Another thing, Chris, is that just because something's reached approved status does not mean that that list can never be changed. That's important to state. There may be things that can come in that can make a list slightly different or a list... potentially better than it is at the moment, and that would go through the normal process. But that could be they're not like sacrosanct once they're approved. If that makes sense.
Absolutely, but okay. So this is something that we were talking about a little bit before we started the recording. I mean, you could, let's say you wanted to build a variation of, for example, an empire list. I don't know what that could be. The artillery train of Nuln comes up to mind as a nice, probably fun for the Empire player, but not fun for the opponent kind of.
It's not a dwarf engineer build, is it?
It's probably equally bent to your favorite dwarf engineer. If you can imagine an Empire list, double the amount of artillery because it's Nuln. It's the gunnery school.
So do they have some kind of like a homing beacon that they can fly in space like a satellite?
And there's an idea, right? I'll go and write this now. Okay, so if you want to make that kind of thing, or the Dwarf Engineering Guild list, you start off, it's an experimental list. You can play around with it all you want. And when you come up with something that is not completely bent and broken, then maybe we have a look at it. If you had those sort of variant lists, they probably would either sit alongside the current approved dwarf list, or... you know, it may be a solution to some of the other issues that we have within the game, that, you know, the recurring problem that we have with, I don't know if they problem, concern that some people express about Command 10 generals, it may be worth making some variant lists for the Command 10 armies that don't have a built-in nerf to the rest of the command structure. And we try those out and see whether we can make it a better playing experience for everybody. Because there are some armies where the intention was to make them very mobile and reactive, but actually it just makes them incredibly predictable. And there are a few moves that you can pull off with a Command 10 general that probably are not great if you're on the receiving end of them, if it happens too often. But I think the important thing here is that for those type of changes, a huge amount of play testing needs to be done before it gets anywhere near developmental status. Just because, as we said at the start, it's the idea here, and I think it's important to not lose sight of the fact the idea with the game, the idea is to have fun. Doesn't stop you from having fun.
That's a very interesting point. That is the reason that I dislike that that Gunline Dwarf Engineers Guild, because those baseline, like, what do they call them? Gunline armies, isn't it? Basically, you've got an army that just castles up and blasts the living shit out of anything that is stupid enough to come within range. They're a kind of like negative play experience that Warmaster doesn't have. And if you've ever played against like those kind of lists in other game systems, they can be really tedious to play against. Whether you win or lose, the actual gameplay is tedious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the trouble is when you start doing that, the amount of surgery that you have to do elsewhere in the rules to try and make those armies a little bit more competitive, i.e. defeatable. I mean, you start scratching around and you think, okay, so the problem with the cannon armies is the cannons are massively destructive and they're probably a little bit underpointed for their effectiveness. So let's make either the cannons less effective or increase the points value. Oh, and then the other problem is when you're fighting a very shooty army in Warmaster, and there are shooty builds out there, which when combined with decent artillery are very tedious to play against. And what do we do with that? Shall we, you know, what do we do about drive back? Do we look at the medieval rules about support, reducing the amount of drive back that you get? And you start realizing there's one little thing that you want to do, the ripples that spread out, you end up changing the entire game just because I wanted to make one change. And that again is where the idea of the committee is kind of this protective mechanism so that, you know, if you want to try these things out at home and do what you like, that's totally fine because you're there to play your game and have fun. But if it were to start becoming not fun for everybody else in the wider world, then that's why this protective mechanism is in place.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I would say, if you do want to find a way to punish armies that like to castle and use like gun lines, is you use scenarios that make them have to spread out or deployment systems that make them not able to form up. So it could all be solved by use of scenarios. I would generally recommend not using pitch battle as your default. If you could use like maybe half or a third of your game as pitch battle and then try and do other things, other scenarios to make the game different.
I think that's a very good point that I tend to think about a pitched battle as the default because when I play, that's what I tend to play. And you're right, actually playing more scenarios would negate the power of some of those armies that are a little bit more troublesome, let's say. because otherwise, I mean, Barry, there's a suggestion for a future podcast for you and Paul. How do you deal with artillery? How do you deal with the problem things in the problems? How do you manage your opponent's flyers? How do you manage your opponent's artillery? What are the workarounds for that? Could be a good post-bag episode. Everybody can put their solutions in and you can discuss them on air.
Sounds nice, sir.
Maybe get Janners to come in and share his secrets.
He never gives secrets away. I don't know if you know the man. That's why he always wins. You'd have to give him a truth serum. He doesn't even drink. You can't even get him drunk.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, decaf lattes are his drink of choice.
Half a pear cider. That's it. But that's why he's a professional.
Or possibly even, I mean, I know Jim keeps all the playing stats. A round robin with some of the people who are in Jim's upper quartile of good players. I'll definitely not be guesting on that episode, I can tell you now.
Excellent.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
I think we've nearly done this. I think it's, what else do we need to say about it? That this is not fixed in stone. So if there is a blind spot, because we have been working on this in the forum with Alish and some others for a little while, and Jim, obviously Jim, the sage. But as with everything, this itself is in a developmental stage. So this is not the approved status. So if there's a blind spot or if people have got feedback on it, then feed it back, and we will certainly amend this to kind of be where it needs to be to order to do the job we want it to do. And hopefully this gives people, you know, I've got an idea. I come in at the blue stage. I find somebody to champion my idea through the experimental stage. Get it to developmental. Then it can be play tested widely, and then hopefully it'll get the green light eventually in a year or two's time.
Yep. I think also the other comment that I would make is when you have an idea for a new thing, it's probably a good idea, particularly if it's a whole new army list, try to make it fit to one of the existing lists so that you have another way, an official way, approved way of playing it. And with a little bit of creative thought, a lot of the nice ideas that people have, they can the models, when you make it for whatever army you've just conceived, the models, I would hope, can be used for playing one of the already approved lists, so you can take your nicely painted army anywhere you want and play it in a tournament before whatever you've come up with fits into the developmental or approved status. And you can have a huge amount of fun finding units for that proxy, something that proxies for this, something that proxies for that. I find that's, I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, I find it hugely enjoyable to have an army that fits with two or perhaps even three different approved lists, so that you have a lot of flexibility and you can get more armies on the table with less painting time.
Yeah, so this is the gym method. This is the gym method. He'll have one army that he'll proxy for three or four different armies. Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah. One thing I would say is try and use templates for units that are already in the game. The game has got a wide variety of different unit types. Were lists have really struggled. Like, for example, the Norse list. The two areas in the Norse list that were really difficult to deal with were the things that didn't exist anywhere else. The Valkyries, who were just a pain in the arse to get into the game, and the Huskarls, because there was nothing else. The Huskarls were just templated on themselves. They're the only thing with three hits and four up armor and four attack. They're really difficult to balance.
Well, actually, that's a good point. That's the problem we're having with the Chaos Dwarf Bull Centaurs at the moment, because again, it's a unique stat line and point value. So those of you who've looked at the Nippon list, actually, every single stat line in the Nippon list is copied from somewhere else. So we know that stat line works. The points value is representative of what it does in the game. And those units have been well tested. So, for example, you know, the Ashigaru Spearmen, they are basically Empire Spearmen. Ashigaru Bowmen are your standard Empire Crossbowmen. The Samurai, Foot Samurai, they're basically Lizard Men Sauruses. And the Tengu are a direct port of Harpies. So you can see where, actually, sorry, not Harpies, I beg your pardon, Demon Flyers, because they have the other armor save.
And the instability.
But basically, it's copied. All the stuff is copied from some of the other lists, so that we know that, and it's just really which unit types do you want to have available. Warmaster, it's interesting, and one of the important distinctions between Warmaster and Warhammer. Warhammer has every possible troop type because that was driven by Games Workshop sales, wanting to sell you boxes and models. Warmaster, you've got a number of identifiable troop types. So, you know, you've got your 3-3-6 stat line as your normal standard infantry, 3-3-5, your elite infantry. You've got some standard cavalry profiles and some other standard things. And the question really is not what do we do to tweak these? The question is, which things out of that possible list of unit types, what do you want to put into your list? So all the information is already out there. Just look at the current lists that are out there and see what combination of things you want to come up with.
Yeah. So like your Bull Centaurs are having trouble because they're a unique profile. And so basically you just have to find a different profile you're happy with. I don't know what that would be. It'd probably be more Dark Elf Cold Ones than Lizardmen Cold Ones, because they've got Nega traits attached to the Lizardmen Cold Ones that you wouldn't have as a Chaos Dwarf. Mm-hmm. So you try and use things that are already in the game. And if you are writing a new list, I can't stress this enough, try and keep it to 8 entries rather than 18 entries, because 8 entries is the minimum, and that's also where you should be looking at. You can have one or two extra if you really must, and absolutely do not just go around cherry picking the best stuff from each list and throwing it into a list, because that's the other thing that people tend to do. They're like, oh, I like this from here, I like this from here, I like this from here. Before you know it, you've got you're basically playing Space Marines.
Yeah, actually, that is very true, and it is easy to cherry pick, and that again is where you're going to end up with a very unbalanced list, and nobody's going to want to play it.
Yeah,
you're going to want to play the list.
Yeah, you're going to want to play
against it, because it's too broken.
So most lists have strengths and weaknesses, most of them, not all of them, but the problems come where lists have just strengths. Just everything's good. Like Lizardmen, without their weaknesses, would be overpowered. There's no doubt about it. But they have enough handicaps like the 20 centimeter ordering, the divine guidance, and all that kind of shenaniganry that make them tough to deal with and a strong army, but not game breakingly good. Where yeah. if you took the lizardmen infantry and the cavalry and the flyers and everything and put them in a regular list with regular command structure, they'd be completely ridiculous to play against. So yeah, that's my two penny.
It is a good point. And also, if you are thinking about some army lists, again, think about the minimums, the maximums to build on some of the strengths, to contain some of the strengths, and to balance the army list. For example, in the Nippon list, the Oni are basically demonic ogres. They have the ogre stat line, they have the demonic instability negatrait. In the developmental version of the Nippon list, they are 1 per 1,000. The significant thing for them, they do not count towards the breakpoint of the army. And in earlier drafts of the list, we had them at 2 per 1,000, and 4 units in a 2,000 point list of completely expendable ogres with this, the negatrate of the instability wasn't as big a handicap as we'd thought, but they were just too good. They were too good because they were too numerous. So we had to tone it down a bit for the sake of a bit of balance.
Because you've got a brigade of fearless, they can't be terrored. Because they're demons, and that prevents them being terrored. So yeah, they were good. A brigade of those, completely disposable. Woof.
It was too good. So that's how we, and again, some of you who've messaged me about why are we not allowed more of that particular troop type on the Nippon list? Yeah, just for the sake of balance is the answer.
Okay, so have we finished this section now, Chris?
Yeah, I think we're good. Yep.
Okay, so we can close that down. So the rules committee at the moment is going through a refreshment phase, a refreshing phase. So we've had to remove some people who've been inactive. We've also had some people resign their commissions because they, for whatever reason. So we're going through a process of renewal. And so we need to talk a little bit about how that works and how we're selecting people. So one thing to say that in order to be part of the rules committee, you need to be playing Revolution and you need to have played Revolution, because this isn't the same game. It's got a lot of the same characteristics as Warmaster, but we can't have some of the mistakes we made the first time round is we invited people widely from the kind of hierarchy of the existing Warmaster community. And they were happy to be involved up until the point of where we started to want to change things. And then they were far less happy to be involved. So what we don't want is people who haven't played Revolution and don't really want to play Revolution, but want us to not play Revolution and go back to the original game, because that ship sailed. And people are welcome to play the original game if they want to. I mean, we're just providing a different set of rules that have kind of taken into account some of the things we felt weren't working properly. And Alish re-implemented the combat system, which was one of the bigger issues in the game. And that's how we ended up in Revolution. It was just a happenstance that we are where we are. But there's no reason that people can't play Revolution or play Vanilla or play whatever you want. But the problem is you can't be part of this committee if you're not interested and you're not playing Revolution, because you're not an honest broker. You're just coming in here to cause shit. If I'm going to be impolite about it, so that's the ground rule. You're welcome to join in and be part of the Revolution scene and possibly part of the committee, but you have to have the game of Revolution's best interest at heart, and you have to be playing it.
Fair enough. One of the other things that we're trying to address, we would like to see representation from as wide a number of player communities, if I can call them that, as possible. So basically a player community, it's a geographic area within which you're playing with your friends regularly, rather than an individual country, because countries are rather differently sized, as we all know. We have quite a lot of British people already on the committee, So at the present time, we're trying to stay away from more of the English guys, just for the sake of balance. And if you, I've made some approaches to people already via Facebook this week. So hopefully we'll see a few more people from a wider community of players getting involved and joining in. So I think really what Barry's saying, if you are an experienced player, currently playing Revolution, if you're active within the community and you'd like to come and join in with the rules committee, we'd very much like to hear from you. If you want to have some ideas and play test them, that's open to absolutely everybody. And again, we'd love to hear all the ideas that you've got so that we can start those discussion processes on a place that's not Facebook, so that we can try to bring things into the game rather than them popping up and disappearing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, yeah. So we have made approaches, and through some of the people that are already part of the committee, they've extended the tentacles out to people within their communities. But we would like to hear from some of the communities not represented. So like the French community, I think, would be quite nice, although I'm not sure what kind of response that will receive. Like the Australian community, we've got quite a few Americans interested. The Polish community would be good.
Definitely.
Are there any other communities that we get a lot of interest from? We've got a couple. We've got one, potentially two, of the Swedish community involved. We've got a couple of the Czech community involved. We've got one of the German community. So if there are any more from the German community that want to be involved, we're trying to get to 21 as a maximum, because that's about as big as our infrastructure can handle. And but we've got quite a few spaces. So if it is something you're interested in, and you are active and you are a player of Warmaster, I'm sorry if that means some people who are passionate about the game at this particular point but haven't been active until now, if that kind of means it's difficult for you to get involved at this point. But what I would suggest is be active from this point onwards, and there will be an annual recruitment and what do you call it? So people leave and then we need to replace them annually.
Yeah. Okay. So I think it's probably worth talking about what you're committing to if you want to step up. There's a committee forum which we'd like you to log on to reasonably regularly. There will be the process for approving things. What we want to try and do is gather it up into one time period per year, which is probably going to be the start of each calendar year, so that things are put out to the community as a whole. Probably in the first quarter of the year for play during that 12-month period, so that we don't have continual chops and changes and updates and things. So a single voting window, which is Barry's idea, I think that's probably a very good idea, just to keep things changeable, but not being updated every 5 minutes, because that's very annoying.
And it also keeps Alish's workload under control, because he's the gatekeeper to the files, and if files need updating, he'll have to do those. I mean, we can release the document saying what's in developmental, what's in approved status, but Alish is the guy who holds the books, so he and the website, so we need to be mindful of the amount of work we're pushing onto him.
Absolutely. So basically, you are committing to logging into the forum, discussing things, play testing things, reporting back on play testing, and then participating in the voting and approval process, which will be in the first couple of months of each calendar year. The commitment to join the committee is for a year, and if you want to stay on at the end of that time, then you can. But if you find that you don't, or it doesn't work out for you, then we can all stay friends and you can leave us to our stuff. Is that a reasonable summary, Barry?
Yeah. And then we can obviously replenish back up to 21 each year. Yeah.
Yep.
Sounds and obviously good. there are chairs and vice chairs and stuff. But at the moment, I think we're just going to keep with the structure we've got at the moment, and then we will review those when we get to the next voting period. I think maybe after the first year.
So if somebody's interested, how do they get in touch Barry, should they contact you directly?
Well, I don't think the actual list of committee members is hidden, but I'm not actually sure it's published either. So I haven't got a problem with you me telling you who the committee members are. Do you think that's a bad thing, Chris? Do you think we shouldn't do that?
No, it should be public. Of course, no, it's public. I think
so. Yeah. So,
no, but if somebody new comes along and wishes to join, what's the call to action? Are they emailing you?
Call to action is find one of the people on this list of nine and speak to them.
Right. So anybody on the committee?
Okay. I guess so. Who else is going to be able to come to the committee apart from a committee member? I would have thought to propose them and nominate them.
Okay.
And second
fair enough.
Them.
That's fine.
So you've got Mr. Chris, and you've got Mr. Hello. Barry, and you've got Mr. Paul, who's at work saving lives. You got Jim the Gent. You have Alish and Rad from the Czech community. And you have Ollie from Germany and Christopher from Sweden and Dave from the USA. Warmonger Dave. I think that's our current committee after we've slimmed down and had some resignations and stuff. And so that's where we are. We've got nine. We need to get to 21 maximum. So that leaves potentially 12 slots available. I'd like to say it is a lot of work. When it starts, you think, oh, it won't be that much of a commitment. It can get to be quite a commitment, which is why the voting window is a finite period. Because although you will need to dip in and out occasionally, like monthly or fortnightly or whatever, obviously the more you come in the better, but like real life gets in the way. During that voting window, you need to be available because that would get hectic. So if you can't commit to the voting window, which I think this year is the last three January. Weeks in January, if you can't commit to those 3 weeks, or maybe it's just slightly longer than 3 weeks, then it would be quite difficult to be a committee member because that will be a relatively hectic period, I imagine, from previous experience.
We deliberately chose the period in January. So January is usually quite a quiet time of year. The other time every year we'd thought about having it was November. November in a normal year is going to be quite busy socially in the run-up to the Christmas period. So therefore, January probably better. People hopefully will have a little bit more time on their hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, if you can commit to those, because when we did the initial batch, because not everything goes through without argument. Lots of things have to be heated discussions, and those heated discussions can take a while to thrash out. So, and we need everybody to be involved, as many eyes to be on the prize as possible, because that way less stuff has a chance of getting through that we didn't want to get through. Like, if there's a glaring, obvious mistake that we haven't seen, then the more people that look at it, the less chance there is of us missing it. So, yeah. So if you can commit to those and you're a War Master Revolution player and you're somebody who's known to the community, then please get in touch. Yep. We'll be reaching out to some people this weekend, and we already have been. So,
excellent.
Okay.
So a way forward. But I think probably what I would want to emphasize as maybe a final comment is that you don't have to be on the committee to make up some new things, try some new things out. The idea is that the conceptual and the experimental development stages, those are done outside of the rules committee. And that is very definitely open to absolutely everybody who's got some good ideas. So when that is all up and running, the more the merrier in that particular part of the scheme of things, just so that we can have as many good ideas, which hopefully make the game better for everybody.
No, absolutely. And there isn't a threshold for an idea here at that stage. If you have an idea and you think it's a good idea, then bring it forward. And if it makes its way through the process, all the better. But please don't feel that if just because you can't be part of the committee now or whatever, that you can't be involved, because that's the complete opposite of what we're trying to do here.
Everybody is welcome. All the ideas are welcome, so please do join in with that.
Okay, excellent. Right, Christopher, I think that's us done for today. So
sounds good.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Zeph, and all your endeavours as always, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've done it. Sterling works.
Always a pleasure.
So next episode, I think we're going to do an army list. I haven't decided which one. Maybe we'll do Beastmen, because that's one.
It's episode 150. You have to have a big party. You have to celebrate it.
A big party? What, on my own?
I don't know.
I'll drink my tea from my Bruno cup. That will be my party.
I don't know. Mailbag. I don't know. What did you do for episode 100?
It was a long time ago. You didn't go, did you? You didn't get one of these?
Bruno, no, I couldn't go. Unfortunately, no.
Polish lads. Maybe, good please, job. Polish lads, one or two of you get involved in this, please, because I know you do sterling work out there in Poland. You run a couple of big events every year, so it'd be nice to have you involved.
Yes, very definitely.
Right. So thanks a lot, Chris. This was episode 149 with Chris and Barry. We'll see you all soon.
See you soon. Take care. Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye.
Would you like to know more?